Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the U.S. CDI Task Force. This is now our second meeting, having our first one last week. So I know it's been a while since the group met, so why don't we dive in, starting with a quick roll call, and then I'll turn it over to Terry, one of our co-chairs, to kick us off with a few opening remarks. Christina Caraballo, I believe she is going to be either absent or late, but I'll just double check. Is she on the line? Okay. Terry O'Malley?
Here.
Stephen Lane?
Present.
Oliver?
Hey, good afternoon.
Cheryl Turney? Les Leonard? Ken Kalamoto, I believe, is still on vacation. Clem McDonald? Valerie Gray?
Here.
Tina Esposito?
Present.
Maxine Breedy? Okay, maybe the others will join us here a little bit late. Terry, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, well, that's great. Thanks again, everyone, for coming in. Christina, co-chair, is going to be between phone connections, so may or may not be able to participate, but if she can, she'll chime in. So meanwhile, why don't we move to the agenda, and we'll go just sort of quickly through what we're going to be doing. We're going to touch on our work schedule, and then we're going to dive into reviewing what we did last time on the demographics, but spend the bulk of our time today on the provenance. So if we have the next slide up, please, Lauren. And thank you all for being here. Much appreciated. Actually, we're going to throw a timeline slide in there at one point just to remind everyone sort of where we were going. There we go. So we're now on March 11th. And then we break next week for the face-to-face meeting and then come back the week of the 25th where we'll talk about clinical notes. And then vital signs. So by the first week in April, we're going to have to complete our draft recommendations, and then we'll spend some time refining them, and then ultimately present them. So it's still a pretty tight time schedule, and the basic outline of each of these sessions is going to be a short period of time spent reviewing what was done the previous week or weeks, bulk of the time on the topic, the major topic of the day, and then public comment, and then we may, if we can, start thinking about the work for the following week. Okay, so let's go off. I think, Johnny, you were going to pull up the Google Doc.
Yeah, sure. Did you want me to share my screen for that, or did you want everybody to just navigate it to the URL?
Why don't you put your screen up? People may find it easier to follow if they log in on their own. It's live, so any changes that are made on the screen here will show up on your version. And
is everyone able to see my screen?
Can you repost the URL in the public chat for people to get to it quickly?
Good idea. And yeah, and I think the screen's going to have to blow the screen up a little bit. Although if you hit that box with the four arrows going to the corners, it will expand everything for you. So the reason we're using the Google Doc is Stephen Lane and Ken Kawamoto really have used it to perfection in the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force, and we hope we can do the same. And the point is, we need everyone to comment, and the nice thing about a Google Doc is you can comment anytime you want, whether or not the topic is currently being discussed or will be discussed or has been discussed. But it requires our comments, and the sort of the rules of the game are listed in the front of the Google Doc, which just says, make all your comments as suggestions, and we'll edit them real time. So our plan is, to use the Google Doc as our live document, which we will continue to refine and ultimately will be what we present to the high tech. So with that in mind, if you've had a chance to get to your own Google Doc, great. If not, Johnny, let's take us to all right, patient demographics.
My suggestion was not so much to display the link as to copy and paste the link into the public chat so that people could grab it from there and get to it easily.
All right, we'll let Johnny do that too.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So very briefly, we're going to spend maybe 5 or 10 minutes on demographics. And I think we can kind of scroll down a little bit, Johnny, down to the things that the ONC proposed elements. Yeah. All right. So a couple of things. One is we're likely not to be making too many suggestions about the elements that are already in the common clinical data set. So we probably won't spend a lot of time on that. We may want to circle to ONC about it, but let's focus instead on the proposed new data elements that ONC has. And then any other data elements that we want to tee up. So we had some discussion about address. And I think it was Clem who made the suggestion, or has made it at another meeting, that where there exists standardized data sets that are curated and maintained by an authority, like in this case the U.S. Postal Service, that we should probably just point to those as being the active standard. And having said that, let me stop and hear comments from the committee, whether you think that's reasonable or whether there are other alternatives.
Well, Terry, do you mean standards for the addresses themselves, or are you talking about the format of the address?
Well, is there a difference? I was just thinking that if we have a format that allows us to be very granular on an address, the standards can follow that, but I think the format becomes the important.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, when you're going on a website and you put in your address and they say, do you mean this one or this one or this one? And they're sort of all variations on your address. And some have all the digits of the zip and some have fewer and et cetera. I mean, that's sort of I'm thinking of the standards of the address content. But the address format, I mean, I know the Postal Service has sort of an address format, but I don't know whether there's a format standard that says whether or not you spell out avenue and those sorts of things. I know we talked about leveraging work done by AHIMA in terms of documentation of names and whatnot. I don't know if they have anything on address standards. It just seems like we have both format and content issues with the address.
Okay. Yeah, good point. Yeah, thanks, Steve. So we should make sure we've got a format that makes sense and a content that helps us, again, going back to our use case, which is really patient matching. Yeah, so the issue with patient matching is how granular do we have to get?
And then I think we talked last time about the need for standards for addresses for people who are experiencing homelessness.
Yep. Yeah, that's included a little later on. There we go. Yeah. Flagged. So thanks, Stephen. Those are great comments. And anyone else want to chime in on address?
Did we decide whether we were interested in simply current address or addresses? We talked about work address, school address.
Yeah,
past addresses obviously can be helpful.
Yep. Yeah, I think that is in the AHIMA appendix.
Right.
Some of it. I don't know if school address is, but you know, I think that's a separate. Well, that may go into our suggested additions to this data class.
Our friend Lisa Nelson is providing some further input in the public comment chat about another source for standards, AHDI Book of Style, not something I'm familiar with.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lisa. Much appreciated. All right. So we'll go back and work on that, and we'll take a look at the AHDI Book of Style, and we'll look at Postal Service, and we'll look at AHIMA, and we'll come up with, I think, two data sets. Sort of, what are systems currently required to capture under their requirements for certification, and then sort of what do we think ought to be the next frontier that goes through USCDI to become part of certification. All right, so we'll chop it into those two pieces, and we can talk about that when we come back after the face-to-face. Anyone have any other comments or suggestions on that? Okay. So then we're going to go back. We're going to do probably the same thing with phone number. I think we had a good discussion last time. And the fact that the mobile number is now probably the most stable patient matching identifier out there. So the question is, again, we'll look to AHIMA's guidance on their paper, but we'll probably have to come up with some further detail for this ONC measure. And again, the question will be, what's currently being collected, and what are EHRs currently required to be able to collect? And then just make sure we require them to turn that functionality on. That would be sort of the quick first hit. And then come up with a list of what we want them to do next time. Again, let me stop there and appreciate anyone else's comments on us. Okay, so let's, and Johnny, I think we can go through the new data elements, and I think we'll probably just keep going through this. I'm not sure we're ready to have much of a discussion on that. So you want to just keep on going down the list? Okay. We'll just go through. So this is...
Yeah, so these were the use cases, I believe. Yeah, problems and comments. Did you want to go here, you said?
Well, just I think the pr- primary use case, and again, anyone on the committee, please correct me. I think it's really patient matching. And if we get it right for patient matching, we'll probably get it right for all the other use cases that we came up with. So I think let's go through this. I think we had a good discussion about that last time. So this is just sort of a quick summary of what we did last week. Again, we'll keep cleaning this up, and when a little bit fuller committee reconvenes after the face-to-face, our first order of business will be going through this line by line and cleaning it up and making sure it's in final form. So again, everyone's encouraged to go to the Google Doc and make suggestions on any of this. Okay, so let's then dive into provenance. And again, if anyone has a comment, just break in. Don't worry about it. And whether or not it's on the topic being covered or not, just speak up. So ONC has proposed those three elements, right? The author, timestamp, and the organization. And
so one thing that struck me when I first read this is we need to specify the organization at the time that the content was created. Right, because
yeah.
The author might have changed organizations.
Correct. So that actually brings up a pretty fundamental point, and it's one I think you may have made at some point, Stephen. That is, does each data element require a unique identification, and that identification would include source organization, its source author, and its timestamp.
And if I may, this is Tina. I guess the question is how granular
yep.
is author intended to be, right? That's also a question. Is it at the organizational level or below?
Yeah. So what do you think?
I can see both. It also depends on the setting, right? If provider's office is different than a hospital stay.
I'm having a problem thinking of an example where, well, where both levels would be important.
Yeah.
If I order a lab at Mass General and it's reported out by Mass General, I'm not the author of that, I guess. I'm not the author of a lab report. I may be the ordering clinician, but I'm not the author. So I may have answered my own question.
Maybe both then, right? So ordering provider, I don't know what the right term is, so you guys can, we can think through this, but basically the author in which, you know, so in that example, I think maybe both entities might be valuable. I don't know. I would want to see what our clinicians think.
Yeah, you definitely need the actual clinician. Everything from their own monitoring of quality metrics to an insurance company monitoring quality metrics down the road.
Okay, so we want to expand the definition of author, or do we want to add another category? 'Cause I'm thinking the author is the agent that actually generates the data. So if I write a note, a clinical note, then I'm the author of that note. But who's the author of a lab report or an X-ray image?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we drill down into that. You know, and we talked about it last time. You know, you could think of lots of different authors. You know, the ordering provider, the authorizing provider, you know, the lab tech, the head of the lab. You know, but we have to think about that because those potentially any given piece of data could have multiple authors. And you know, I don't think there's one right answer, but we should come up with something. You know, for each class of data. But I mean, clearly, you know, clinician notes, it's pretty clear it's the clinician who wrote the note, or clinicians, as we discussed, you know, if there's a scribe, if there's a student, if there's a trainee of some other sort, if the nurse helps with part of the note documentation, you know, do we just want the authorizing physician or provider for the note as a whole? I think, you know, clinically, that's the thing we're most interested in, the person who put their signature on it and verified that this was the note. I don't think we need to ask for a lot of the extras. I think, you know, similarly, as we think through an imaging study, I think most of us are going to be less interested in the radiology tech or techs that supported it as opposed to the signing radiologist. You know, if we're talking about a lab, I think most of us are pretty comfortable with the physician whose name, you know, is responsible for the lab results and less interested in the lab tech. I think there are rational answers that will lead us to limited numbers of authors for each data type, but I do think it warrants thinking through.
So I'm going to push back a little bit and say, isn't there only one author? Because if you have more than one author, then provenance becomes difficult. So what I'm thinking is that we need other terms besides author. But I think of author as being the generating agent, whatever that agent is. And then there are other people involved in that data element. But they're not the author of the element. They are the site where it was created, or the anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly have no objection to saying that any piece of data should have one principal author identified. I just think we need to define, as I said, for each type of data, who that should be. So it shouldn't be random. It shouldn't be, you know, the radiologist at one site and the tech at another site, and the head of the lab medical director at one site and the tech at another site. That we shouldn't be that loose about it.
So I think the
medical director of the lab is a really nice one, because for CLIA issues, I know oftentimes it's important to have that person's name, and those folks, you know, tend to have a real sense of responsibility for the quality of their data.
Yeah,
I don't think, you know, I think the resulting radiologist is pretty clear. And if you want to winnow notes down to a single author, then I would say it's the signing, you know, licensed independent practitioner, right?
Yeah. So the implication of that, which I agree with, is that for each sort of class of element, we're going to need to specify an author type, a permitted author type.
Right. But, you know, when you get down into things like fire resources, you know, vital signs, who's the author of a vital sign? I mean, it seems to me it's the person who took it, you know, so it's the patient or it's the nurse. It's not necessarily the attending physician, right?
Right.
Does location matter? Would that be something we want to add here? I don't know. I'm asking that as a way to get...
Well, we've got author organization.
Okay.
Obviously, a given organization can have multiple locations. I don't know how important location is. You know, do I care that the blood pressure was taken? I mean, I care perhaps that it was taken in the ICU as opposed to in the mobile clinic van. But if they're both run by Harvard, that's sort of a different thing.
Well, you know what made me trigger that, Stephen, is when you said the patient took the if it's home or if it's non-traditional. That's the only thing that generated that comment.
Right, home, drugstore, yeah, those things end up being relevant.
Yeah, so the patient of the drugstore would be the author, right, I suppose. Yeah, and do we really need to know the name of the person who took the blood pressure as opposed to the site in which it was taken, or?
Yeah, I don't think the name is all that interesting. It would be really highly unlikely that anybody would go back and talk to that person about that blood pressure. But right. But again, I think the context is certainly relevant.
Okay.
You know, street nurse versus ICU nurse is a different thing.
Yeah. Right, versus patient versus
right.
drugstore. Yeah. Versus patient, right, versus your Bluetooth blood pressure cuff, which is beaming it directly somewhere. So I guess when we say author, we really mean the originating source. Does that make sense? If we think of the originating source can be the author, like in a note. It can be the lab, as in a lab test, or the radiology site for the image, and the radiologist for the image report.
I mean, it seems like we should be thinking about why is this data important? You know, and what I think of is it helps me think about how much I trust the data. It helps me think about how I interpret the data. And potentially, you know, it would be where would I go back to if I had a question about the data?
Yeah.
Or if I wanted to seek out the original documentation. I think that's another use case for knowing the author.
Right, and perhaps one more is by knowing the author, you can also compare it to who changed the data last, who becomes author dash, V2. You know, is it the same author? Is it a new person, new site? I worry about data just passing through without any guarantee that it stayed the same.
The other thing that I guess is top of mind here as I look at this is there a process, and I kind of get beyond it, but where I'm going at it is there a level of validation that occurs at some point that would, to Stephen's point, just allow you to know someone's reviewed this, this is valid, this is true, as opposed to things that might just be passing through and I don't know. Is there a process, an underlying process, if you will, that would allow for some level of verification or validation, just knowing this has been reviewed and verified or something along those lines. I'm not using the right terminology, but some level of validation.
Yeah, that, you know, I was thinking about faxes the other day. They don't have provenance. You know, you're getting a piece of paper, getting an electronic image of a piece of paper without any idea of where it came from. Or, you know, it may be on the lab stationery, but, you know, realistically, you don't know. So, yeah, provenance is a way to tag the data element with enough information to give us comfort that it's from a reliable, valid source or not, but at least that we know what the source is.
Hi, Terry. This is Christina. I'm back at my desk.
Oh, welcome. We're plugging away. Johnny's typing overtime, so.
I see him.
Yeah, I'll try and continue to organize this as you all are talking.
Okay. Well, I think the point of, how much information do we need to be assured about the data element in question, so we know where it's from and who it was generated by, and when, and who changed it. So maybe there's a way. I mean, we've kind of jumped way down in the weeds, and I think certainly one pathway here is going to be to specify a lot of accepted authors for a particular type of data or data element. And that may not be a really long list, but we ought to understand that if we generate sort of an accepted authors list, that's probably going to need to be amended as processes change. So, and the reason I ask that is, so maybe there's a simpler way of designating the author that's less likely to be subject to process change. It would be less granular in that sense. It would be, perhaps give us less insight, but it might be more stable over time. So when we say author organization, so the ONC, or we go back up one more, Johnny, back to the original ONC proposed. Okay, so author. And then the author timestamp and the author organization. Okay. So we got off on location through author organization. All right.
I might have put these in the wrong place, but under the new items, I've added the author contact information and organization contact information. And that kind of gets to Stephen's point earlier about verification, like picking up the phone, who do I call or reach out to verify that this is true?
I'll just comment that there's a lot of really thoughtful chat coming in, the public comments, and I really do hope that folks will, when it comes time for our public comment period, take the floor for a moment and summarize your ideas. We so often at these meetings open for public comment and have none.
So if under the existing framework that ONC proposed, and notwithstanding our other discussion, I was wondering whether if someone changes the data, and I'm not sure exactly how that would get done, but does it make them sort of again, the next author V2 or 1.1 or something, but I'm just trying to think if that's actually clinically relevant, if it ever happens.
Yeah, Terry, an example of that would be in an emergency room or an urgent care clinic when there's a preliminary reading of an x-ray by the attending at the time, and then you'll have a radiology final result 2 to 3 days later that could vary.
Yeah, and that's true. So you'd need to, right, in that case, the second author would be the definitive read. So we would, right. So again, the data, the test, the core data, the radiology image didn't change. And that obviously would be part of how we would identify the reading, would be with the core image. But the reading, which would have something to do with the core image, the data was taken in the initial reading and reading author, would then have the same preliminary data plus the new reading, and so the new reading author. But it would be the same original data tracked back to the original source image. I guess the same thing would happen for lab tests that get a preliminary reading of positive and then they come back with a quantitative reading.
Sure, or pathology reports would be another one where you'll get overreads or send out.
Yeah, anything preliminary, okay.
And we're saying that we want to have both authors, is that right?
Yeah, almost in a chain. Right?
Yeah.
You almost want the provenance to be a long descriptive tag for the data element that says where it started, who did it, and then who's been involved in its evolution.
And that's kind of what we discussed in our other task force, that when we were talking about just assuring the veracity of the data, and especially if it went out into a patient-controlled or other-controlled environment and then came back into the healthcare sphere, assuring that it wasn't tampered with or modified while it was outside of, quote, our control.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. That's right, too. It was, and in that case, the patient would become an author. At least whether or not it was changed, just knowing site A sends their information to the patient, to their patient portal, patient puts it together and sends it to site B.
And then there are probably a lot of situations where we don't have the author entered in a discrete manner. I'm thinking, my patient goes out and has some hair analysis done by their naturopath. They bring me a copy. I might scan it into their record. It's now part of their record. And, but the author data is stuck somewhere in the PDF or the scan of the PDF. So there's clearly a place for unknown authorship. also thinking of the patients that go, you know, go to Korea and get a full body MRI scan, you know, and again, I get it. I might or might not scan it in. Authorship is very hard to determine.
I appreciate all the comments coming in on the chat line. You know, thank you, Brett and Lisa and others. Thank you. Okay, so where are we? Okay. So maybe if we go down to our problem statements and see if there are other problem issues that we want to address. I think we're addressing problem one, okay. Because now we're clarifying the source and the author.
In that list, research probably belongs.
Yeah.
Got an extra letter in there. Thanks.
That's why your Google Docs are so good, Steve. Yeah.
This one's impressive.
Well, it's getting longer. Let's see how impressive it is when we finish it. All right, so we've addressed the question of who changed the data last. So the next, and again, so number four is, I guess we've already answered to say yes, right? Does everyone agree with that? That every data element, we'll have to define what we mean by data element, that it really needs a unique identifier, which will include, you know, it's kind of what it is, its source organization, author, timestamp.
Well, I think your point about needing to define the data element again, I mean, I think we should think through, as we go through the list of items in the various versions of the USCDI, you know, in that table where it says, is this in CCDA, is this in FHIR, we need to kind of go through them one by one, probably creating some kind of a master table. Because I think as we look at different data elements, I think we'll have different judgments about some of these things.
So we should take the current existing table, add another column that says who would be an appropriate author.
Yeah.
All right. So why don't we? All right. So we'll do that as our homework.
I'll admit I've been accused of making really big tables with lots and lots of columns, but I think that might help.
Yeah, I think it is. That's, you know, because in a sense, provenance is just, there's a lot of columns. We're just backing
yeah,
up.
And again, as we say, it's going to kind of vary by data type.
Yeah.
And then I think as we bring new data types into the USCDI over time, this gives us a little bit of a, you know, a checklist of what we need to think about as each one is added.
Good point.
Oh, look, we got Gary Dickinson chiming in. We are in luck. We have the A-team in the public comments today.
Oh, Jeff. Okay. Good comments. All right, so we do agree that everything needs a unique identifier, and the identifier in provenance is part of the identifier. I think number three, I don't know if that's really provenance or...
Yeah, I don't think that is provenance.
No, so...
We've got that in other columns in that USCDI table, right?
Yeah, yeah. Another problem, but it's not going to be solved by provenance. Although, if you required an element that said, you know, this is a designated code set, standardized code set, I don't know if that would, well, we should... Is that worth thinking about at all, or do we just drop that and let somebody else worry about it? Yeah, because when we get data from other places that are using their own proprietary codes and are not using a standard code set, it's hard to know. Well. It's hard to know what to do with it. So maybe it is part of provenance if you just say, we just want to know the code set. We just want to give us the identity of your code set. And if they say, you know, link, okay, that's fine. That's probably more of that's a question. So we can come back to that. What else? What other thoughts about provenance and So we've really done, we've riffed on the three that ONC wants to add. And we can continue to discuss those three. Or if you want, we can go. So, author, timestamp, organization. Okay, so then maybe we just swing down to our to some of the ones that have been proposed. So Christina put in author contact and organization contact.
I think that can be deleted from there because we moved it up.
So, and I'm not sure what unique identifier, in a sense we're creating a unique identifier. And the original identity of the data, I think maybe we've already done those two.
So I have a note, and I don't know where it came from, but in my notes from our last call, under provenance, someone said Medicare code.
Medicare code.
I think it was,
what was
CLEM.
That was Medicare, that may be the Medicare patient ID. That may have been, is that that one?
It's, I'm not sure.
Individual ID in place of a national ID, a voluntary Medicare ID. So any thoughts on anything we would want to add to this new, to the three elements that ONC is proposing?
I think we've, this is good.
Okay. Then, it's, well, Lauren, what if we open public comment now, because it looks like it might be pretty robust.
Okay. Hi, it's Cassandra. Lauren had to step away. But yeah, I mean, if you guys want to open comment now, we can do that.
Yeah. And then
we want to limit it to obviously a short period of time so you guys could go back and finish your comments. But
yeah, well, let's run it. You know, we'll run it as long as we can, but let's stop it at 20 past.
You want to stop it at 20 past? 15 past or 20 past?
20.
Okay.
Run numbers.
Operator.
And if we run out of comments, just resume.
Okay. Operator, can you open the line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And I think is it the ONC rule that it's a 2-minute limit to comments, but then you can get back in the queue and make another 2 minutes.
But also, we are going to capture all of the chat in our notes.
Yeah.
But
right.
Again, if John said he had to step away, but if Gary or Lisa, or Brett, who've been offering a lot of good input, want to comment, that would be great.
Our first comment comes from Brett Marquard with ONC. Please proceed with your comment.
I don't know if this is a comment from ONC, but this is Brett Marquard. There's a variety of provenance activities going on, and I guess my question, to Dr. Lane and others who are, existing and are using EHR today is, when you do reconciliation from outside sources, and I guess maybe I'll make it really simple. When you look at your list of lab results, is there anything, what organization is displayed, and do you even know if it was sent out to a reference lab, or do you just have the last lab that sent it to you?
Can we use Brett's time to discuss that?
Sure. Why not?
I mean, I think Brett makes a really good point. There's the issue of, where was the order placed? Where was the test performed? If I place an order, it might be done in my own organization. It might be sent out to a reference lab. I mean, I think we are, for the most part, interested in the lab that actually performed the test. Which may be the reference lab and distinct from the organization where it was ordered and then resulted to initially. And of course, we're kind of less interested in, if it went through a bunch of hands, on its way to the current reader, you're sort of interested in that chain of trust as it's been described here, but that's not the same as the author, right? The author should be that lab that performed the test.
Yep.
Sure. So another kind of on the same kind of track is if you do any kind of outside reconciliation, I know, sorry for picking on you, Dr. Lane, but I know you use Care Everywhere to exchange information between different sites. When you do reconciliation of a medication list or an allergy list, what information is displayed to you to help that process beyond, the allergy or the object itself? What provenance is associated with it?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we what we see is the organization that actually sent us the data, which again may or may not be the actual author. Like, I may get an immunization from an immunization registry, but they're not the ones who actually administered it. Deep inside, as I dig deeper into the metadata, I might see where it was administered or I might not.
So the implication of that being, what would be helpful for you to know when you're doing, I think Brett, your focus on reconciliation is an excellent one. I think that's an important use case that we ought to just highlight and work off of.
Well, the other critical aspect of that is this provenance data is used to recognize when items that come to be reconciled are duplicative, and you might have the same piece of data coming at you from different sources, and you want to be able to track back to the original author to be able to say, oh, this is the same thing. I'm just hearing about it from multiple places.
Yep, good point. Okay, Brett, you can get back in line again. Thank you. Those are great. Great question. Really helpful.
Operator, anybody else?
Our next comment comes from Emma Jones with Allscripts. Please proceed with your comment. Emma, your line is now live.
Hello. No, I was just commenting. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, great.
I was just commenting on the reconciliation piece that Brett just brought up. I know typically, I'm a nurse. Typically, when nurses do reconciliation, they're looking for the prescriber, the person who prescribed their medication, and then all the other pieces that goes, when did the patient start on it, what the dose, the sick, the medication name, and all that kind of stuff, just to make sure the patient is in double dosing or, safety checks are in place. And it's for nurses, it's important to capture the prescriber in case we need to get back in touch with that prescriber if the patient has problems or issues with the meds. So, that's part of the nursing workflow. And then another part about reconciliation that I think is important is to, in order to streamline reconciliation from a systems perspective, and this is was discussed in the IHC recon profile, is to keep the ID that came with that medication, with that element, data element, in order to be able to trace back, to see if you've seen this in your system, if you see it again, if you've already seen this piece of data element previously, as well as checking the components of the attributes of the data element. So you don't only just look for the ID and then you're done. You also look for the ID, see if you've seen it before, check the attributes to see if the attributes has changed from what you have in your system to what it now is. But that's, that was just my feedback.
So, Emma, thank you very, very much. And so, Stephen, to your multi-column spreadsheet, when we get to author types, and the data element is a prescription, then the author is probably the prescriber.
Yeah, I think that's how most of us think about it.
Yeah. All right, so medication list, the medication becomes another data element and has its own provenance, the author of whom is the prescriber, but then the date and time, then be some other information you'd like to know about, you'd like to add on to that data element.
And then another thing, I'm sorry, I got 15 seconds left. Another thing that we need to take into consideration, problems that have transitioned, you know, like when a problem morphs, say a cough, provider thought it was a cough, now it's pneumonia. How is that handled in provenance?
Yeah. Okay. Good question. So this applies. So again, we need to go through that whole big table of the common clinical data set and the data elements displayed under it, and probably go through and just think through who would be the author. And then if there are other elements besides the timestamp and organization that are needed to make sense of that data element, to reconcile the data element. And again, I think reconciliation is a great use case. We have any other, and thank you, Emma. Do we have any other comments in the queue?
Our next comment comes from Lisa Nelson with MaxMD. Please proceed with your comment.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, Lisa.
Great.
Glad you're here.
Okay. Thank you very much. So thank you for picking up all the public comment chats that are there. I put a lot of things in as you were going through some of the other data elements. I'll hope you take that just as written, but I'd like to spend my 3 minutes in the area of data provenance. And I just wanted to say that when it comes to digital technology, sometimes what we've done in the past doesn't offer a good roadmap for what we need to do going forward into the future. Digital technology changes what's feasible, and it can really change reality in terms of what's even possible, what we know to think about how things can work. There are many roles besides author, so if you guys do go into a table and start to think through author, I would recommend that you begin by collecting from the various standards organizations like CDA and FHIR to understand the other available roles that are already there, like performer and participant and custodian and authenticator. Just get a list of the other roles so that you understand that who is the author is independent from and in addition to what other roles a person may be playing, just so that your work at least lines up with what's already there and makes sense given the other roles that are already defined. I believe that deduplication is one of the key use cases. I definitely think reconciliation is important, but maybe it's kind of a special flavor of deduplication. And for that reason, I also think that the three elements that we kind of skipped over, we didn't have much conversation around unique identifiers, original identifiers, and supplemental identifiers. I think that they play a very fundamental role in all of this discussion and very much need to be considered a part of it, because the thing which you are marking authorship about is identified with an identifier. And in order for these things to be shared across disparate systems, you have to get those IDs working and contextually working so that that the authorship can make sense. I will offer one other use case. It's something around, if you guys know the acronym, HCC scoring has to do with value-based care and risk adjustment for patients who have a score applied based on diagnoses that they have, active diagnoses. And there are notions that a person's diagnosis could just go away if it has not been reattested in a certain period of time. And so as we think about authors and reauthoring or reasserting that somebody has got diabetes, that authorship and the timestamp is very important, because there's starting to be other dependencies around this use of this data that, unless you have the ability to say, okay, somebody was originally diagnosed with diabetes back in 1999, but it has been reasserted as recently as 3 months ago, therefore they still have this condition. You have to take those things into consideration. So timestamp paired with that authoring is paired with IDs to go along with what you're talking about, all those things need to be taken into consideration together.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. That's great. Excellent. Who else is in the queue?
There are no further comments in the queue at this time.
Okay. Well, I first of all, thank you, Emma, Lisa, Brett, for your comments. They're really, really helpful. So, task force, shall we go back? I guess, Johnny, maybe go back to the Google Doc. Since we have... All right, so we did our public comment. All right, so we're doing good. So maybe go back to the Google Doc and go to the problems we're trying to solve under provenance. Yeah, so let's add a few more rows. So add reconciliation and deduplication. And I guess the concept, and it's applied more to than just HCC, but it's sort of the role of reattesting or reauthoring. I guess it's really reattesting. Or in this case, around condition.
Sorry, I'm just figuring out how to add a row here.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see, where is it? I'm trying to remember where that was. Yeah, there you go. Oh, you're all set. You can add them anywhere you want. Okay.
Thanks.
All right. So I think if we put those in, we can then, so in this case, it's deduplication. I don't know if there's an F in there. And reconciliation. And then probably, I don't know if this is quite the right term, but sort of reattestation. And then what we can do is we can go through our big spreadsheet and see what common clinical data elements these might apply to, what the roles are. So that was another comment Lisa made. Make a list of potential roles. Make sure they're consistent and there's a place that they can tack back into these recommendations. So between Stephen and our public commenters, we've got a lot of homework to do between now and the 25th.
Luckily, we have a very capable ONC team, right?
Absolutely. And they're on their own. So. All right. Any more comments on provenance? Okay. Then let's spend the last few minutes we have looking ahead to our next set of work, which is clinical notes. And so...
So I had a question on this when I first saw it, and that is this taken as a subset of the CCDA templates, or is this just off the top of somebody's head as important node types? I mean, can we map this list to CCDA, or should we?
Yeah, it has a striking resemblance to the CDA list.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Lisa and Didi in the public comment chat, and they're experts in this area.
Right.
So this is Matt Ron with ONC.
Hey, Matt.
So there's been some work being done by the Argonaut project, and so that is where we started from.
So it's so interesting. The Argonauts always get, like, special, you know, special class, you know, so Argonaut is trying to figure out node types to send on Fire, which is great. But again, we want to make sure that, you know, we're thinking about CCDA and Fire, and mapping between them.
So these exist in CCDA as well. And again, this would be proposed as a floor. So, in the future, there may be more added.
So I guess one question I have is, you know, people have put a tremendous amount of thought into CCDA and the different node types, and it recently went through an expansion and added a few more. Is there a reason why we need to kind of go through that again, or can't we just all agree? You know, I mean, if this is the majority of the CCDA node types, why not just take them all? Why start with yet another subset and have to go through a cycle of adding the rest later?
Good question. So that, I mean, Stephen, that can be our recommendation. And we'll just take them out and list them and just say, let's just do it.
Rather than just taking a subset of CCDA, let's ride on the coattails of that fine work and take them all.
Yeah. And sort of along those lines, if we flipped it, are there Fire resources that are being built that don't have a CCDA reflection?
That is to say, are there note types that are being built or suggested for fire that have not been considered by CCDA? Is that what you're asking, Terry?
Yes. Thank you. That's what I'm asking. Not, well, I just, no. And if there are, we ought to take that list.
Yeah. So
as well.
There is work being done at HL7 for on fire to be able to capture these
Good.
Clinical note types.
And here again, Brett and Lise are providing us with a lot of the background in the comments.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I just, again, just for the sake of doing it once and making it reasonably complete, it seemed to me that we should just make sure
that Matt, potentially as one of the authors of this section, or certainly, you know, you've been involved from the ONC side, was there a reason why you felt that the Argonaut subset of interest was preferable to taking the whole list?
I mean, there's a million clinical note types. So, but this was work that was being done, and this was decision we made based on the work that was being done in Argonaut that this could be started as a floor.
Got it.
Okay. But they're asking our input about whether that floor is high enough.
Yeah.
That's fine. So we'll do our due diligence and make sure that anything that's not on this list of significance gets added, and if not, then this is agreed. So Lisa's Nelson's comments about that all CDA document types have been profiled in FHIR.
Yeah, it just seems silly to add an extra step.
All right, so that may be, so let's make that one of our recommendations. And try, you can put it in black, meaning we're not going to edit it again.
And it seems to me that, you know, that it doesn't make, we wouldn't necessarily want things to come through multiple channels. You know, if we've said CCDA is the home for note types, you know, that if USCDI got a request from some stakeholder, say, oh, I think I need a note type of ABC, I would think that we would want to route it through CCDA, and they have a process for coordinating with the fire team, et cetera, rather than having those come directly in through USCDI.
Right. You mean through HL7? Kind of. Or through, well, same thing.
Whoever owns CCDA.
Right. Yeah.
Just the idea that we're pointing to that standard as opposed to trying to take some independent take on it.
And that's a great point. So again, in our overall philosophy of not redoing stuff that's already been done, that's just extending our process to say, if someone's developing note types, you know, in CCDA or in FHIR, then we're pointing to those as the sort of next steps into USCDI. Okay, I think that's a good start for thinking about notes. Yeah, I think we've got enough homework to.
Do we have time for opening up for public comments again for the last 5 minutes?
If you guys, we can do that.
Just because
sure.
We hit another topic here.
Yeah. No. Good idea.
Okay. Can you put up the public comment slide, operator?
Our first public comment comes from Lisa Nelson. Please proceed with your comment. Lisa, your line is now live.
Thank you. I was just typing into a comment near your area in the Google Sheet, so you'll have this. Under consolidated CDA right now, we already defined three types of information artifacts that apply to clinical notes. There's the notion of a clinical note as a document, as the whole thing, like a history and physical note is really a document on a whole, And then there are templates in consolidated CDA, which came into existence in the companion guide for 2015 certified EHR technology. And they define how to make a clinical note section, which allows you to add clinical narrative. You can even type it, you know, like this is a section that's clinical notes that are procedure notes. And you can put clinical narrative into a structured document by adding a section. And then there is a third and the most granular notion, which is a clinical note. We call it note activity, that is a template that tells you how to go about adding some narrative, like a sentence or two, that may be specifically relevant to a particular procedure or a particular encounter, and that's called note activity. So there is a great depth of guidance already available on how to represent clinical notes as a concept, three levels of granularity.
Very helpful.
Our next comment comes from Gary Dickinson. Please proceed with your comment.
Hello, this is Gary. I thought it was in queue for the provenance discussion, but that ended and I'm still stuck on the line. So, but okay if I go back to that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This is wide open.
Okay. Just noting in terms of provenance, of course, data is typically captured in conjunction with some kind of an action being taken or some kind of activity. And so when I think of provenance, I think of the who, what, when, where, and why. So the who, of course, could be multidimensional in the sense that there's who the subject of care, there's who is the performer of the particular activity that's being described, similar to what Lisa was mentioning in terms of roles. And then there yet may be another author who is not either the subject or the performer or the observer or one of the other roles. And so I think we have to think of that dimension as well from the standpoint of who. From the standpoint of what, that's where I think about the action being taken. What action is being taken, that is where the data is being captured. And then, of course, when may have at least a couple dimensions, one of which is when did the activity or action occur, and then when was it documented, recognizing that oftentimes something happens and is documented sometime later. And then where may have the same two dimensions in the sense that where it happened may be different than where it's documented. And, of course, where has the dimension of a physical location, but also may have the dimension of a network address or a device ID where the documentation occurs. And then, of course, why, I think, is something that may be important from the standpoint of understanding why the action was taken, what was the rationale from that standpoint. So I think we have to think of those dimensions and then also need to think about data as it flows from source to use, and recognize that there may be multiple points of provenance as different artifacts appear along the way. In other words, there's an artifact created at the point of authorship or point of origination, and then that is captured within the source system. And then there may be artifacts which are then created in the course of exchange, such as fire resources or CDA documents or version 2 messages. And so that's a separate artifact, and there may actually be transformation occurring from the original source content to what is required by the exchange artifact. And so there's provenance associated with that exchange artifact because it really is a separate representation from the original source document itself. And then thinking about it from the standpoint of being sent, being received, the receiving system then creating its own artifact internally that may have yet its another set of provenance associated with the creation of that artifact within the receiving system. So we kind of have to think of all those dimensions, I think, when we talk about provenance, because it's important for us to be able to relate data to the action where the data was captured and also be able to document who did what, when, where, and why, and, of course, with the associated data with that activity. Thanks.
Gary, thank you very much. You get the last word. I think we've run the clock out on this one. So I'll hand it back to ONC to wrap us up.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. As a reminder, our next public high-tech meeting will be March 19th and 20th. And you can visit healthit.gov for more information on that. And our next USCDI task force meeting will be on March 25th, and you can find information on that on the website as well. So thank you, chairs, and thank you, everybody, for your comments.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Bye, all.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye, and thanks.
Bye.